Welcome to the ACC podcast. We hope these messages are a source of growth for you in your spiritual walk with Jesus, or maybe you're just checking us out for the first time. Whoever you are or wherever you come from, we want you to know that we love you and so does Jesus. If you're thinking of attending ACC, we're currently holding one service at 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings, in person and online. You can watch live or get directions or other information directly from our website, anacortischristian.church. That's A-N-A-C-O-R-T-E-S, Christian.church. So, whether you're sitting, driving, running, or hiking, thanks for tuning in. Let's dive into the Bible together.
Good morning, good morning. I'm going to read out of Deuteronomy today. Moses summoned all the Israelites and said to them, "Your eyes have seen all that the Lord did in Egypt to the Pharaoh, to all his officials, and to all the land. With your own eyes you saw those great trials, those miraculous signs, the great wonders. But to this day the Lord has not given you a mind to understand, or eyes to see, or ears to hear. During the 40 years that I led you through the desert, your clothes did not wear out, nor did your sandals on your feet. You ate no bread and drank no wine or other fermented drink. I did this so you might know that I am the Lord your God."
Morning. Have you ever been asked to do something you felt you like had no business doing at all? Anybody? Totally unqualified. It's like, okay, why am I the one doing this? That's been me this week as I've contemplated giving you a message about the wilderness. I'm not going to lie. I'll be fully transparent. I am the least qualified person in this room to be talking about wilderness. It's not lost on me who I'm talking to. I've been in the Pacific Northwest long enough. I've been around you people long enough. I realize I'm talking to a room of outdoor enthusiasts. You take adventures. You go hiking. You grow your own food. You camp for fun, okay? And I just want to start. I am in awe of you. I hope to someday be like you, but I've had to come to the reality that I am not. Given the choice between a tent or a hotel room, the Marriott wins every time, okay? I'm being honest. My happy place, it's not in the mountains. It's not on the water. It's not in a workshop building and fixing things with my hands. It's nothing cool like that. My happy place is a good discount bookstore. I mean, that is my happy place. I can spend hours there. And so I recognize what this makes me. It's like, I am a giant nerd, okay? I am owning it. I recognize it just so we're on the same page. And so you can understand my anxiety. This nerd is supposed to talk to you, outdoor enthusiasts, about the wilderness. The irony is not lost on me, okay? And so all week, I have just been wrestling with this question, like, why in the world, first of all, should you listen to me or anything I have to say? And then also, what wisdom could I possibly offer you that you don't already know? I spent a lot of time thinking about that. Here's what I have to give. It's not a lot, but I think I have one thing to give. You see, while I'm anything but an outdoorsman, I do possess a specific skill set that I do believe may just be the key to not only surviving in the wilderness, but thriving in it. Here it is. I possess years and years of experience getting lost. So if I had to say it another way, I've had extensive training in the realm of constantly finding myself with no idea where I am or where I'm going or what I should even do. I am what you would call an ignorance expert, okay? And so before we go any further in the message, if you are taking notes, the very first thing I want you to do, I want you to go ahead and take out your writing utensil, and I want you to put a line through the title. I've come up with something better. I want you to write in its place, "An Ignorance Expert's Guide to Embracing the Wilderness." That is the message. An ignorance expert's guide to embracing the wilderness. So here's my promise to you. Before we leave this morning, this ignorance expert's going to give you one essential secret for how you can learn to not only embrace the wilderness, but also allow it to lead you to life. And then if you stay awake, as a bonus offer, I will give you 3 bonus secrets for free. All right, but you gotta stay awake and stay with me. Those will come at the end, okay? And so here's, before we get into the secret, I wanna do something first. I wanna revisit the map that Mike laid out for us a couple weeks ago, okay? It's found in Genesis 1 through 11. He spent quite a bit of time last week on the first part of that map. But in this map, it's where we find the blueprint that really makes understanding the rest of the Bible just so much easier. It's really helped me. And the thing I love most about this map is that it's only got 3 locations. It's on a straight line. There are no turns. And so even someone like me can understand it without becoming confused or getting turned around. All right, it's simple. And so I want to just go over this map with you. Again, Mike's already spoken to us about it, but a lot of what we're going to talk about today is going to depend on understanding this map. And so the first location is what I would call the mountain of life. So over here we see, and I would call it God's mountain. I mean, the first couple chapters of Genesis, what we see is we see God has created a mountain. He's put a garden on top of it. He has planted human beings there. And so we have, and it's described as this is a life-giving place. If you want to know what life is, this is it. And so I want to delve into that question, because when we talk about life, and when we talk about like real, I'm not just talking about existing, I'm not talking about surviving, I'm talking about real, actual life. I know that's an abstract concept. You can't necessarily put your hands on it. You can't just like automatically see it. So what is real life? And when we look at the Bible, especially this mountain that God has made, I think we see 2 things that are characteristic of real living. And those things carry on even to today. And so the first thing about what real life is, it always involves the presence of God. Right? Like on the mountain, in the garden, what made that place special was that God's presence was there. And it was experienced fully. Like I'm not talking about a long distance relationship. I'm not talking about emails or text or phone calls. I'm talking about like real living involved experiencing God fully, the same room, embracing, connecting. That is what life looks like. And that's the first thing. Anytime the Bible talks about life, it always involves moving closer to the presence of God on this map that we're going to draw, okay? Now, the second thing that life involves is becoming complete. And so you might ask, like, completely what? And I would say completely human. That all of us are a mixture of what I would say beast and human. That there's never been a Genesis 1 human except Jesus. And so in some way, even like Adam and Eve, I think they had that they had a test to like actually become that, and what happens is they bombed the test. And so they never become what they were intended to become. Instead, they are moved further and further away from God. And so just a quick summary about what life is. Life, it's not about what you possess. It's not about what you achieve or accomplish. It's not about what you do or don't do. Life is 2 things. Life is, again, drawing closer to the presence of God in a deep and meaningful way. And it's about becoming fully human, becoming what you were meant to be. That's life. And so what we see, if this is the first location, what we see is humans, over and over, because of their terrible choices, they descend the mountain. And they start moving further and further and further away from the presence of God. With every decision, they keep moving further and further away until they're really in the valley, over on the other extreme. And on the other extreme in Genesis 11, what we find out, we see it's the Tower of Babel episode. Now that word tower can be a little bit misleading because really what they were building was a mountain. Okay, essentially you have people who are wanting to regain life. They've rejected God's mountain and instead they've said, you know what, we can build our own mountain to life. And so they start building it. They're going to make a name for themselves. That's where life is found. And so they start building this mountain. And the irony is, the more they build this mountain, the further away they get from God. The place is called God comes in, really as an act of grace, saves them from like doing any further damage. And the place is a city called Babylon. And so Babylon becomes this template of like, I call it a counterfeit Eden. It's a counterfeit way of life. We embrace this constantly. We put all these things as humans into this place thinking it's going to give us life. And we just insert one cheap counterfeit after another instead of accepting God's way of life. And so that's what we have. We've got life on one end. We've got the counterfeit on the other end, which I would really call death, right? Babylon, Egypt, whatever you want to end up calling it. And we're kind of stuck in the middle. And this middle ground is often referred to as the wilderness. What is the wilderness? I think it's probably, we're going to talk about it quite a bit today. We might as well like define it, right? It's this middle ground. It's not the place of life. And it's not the place of death. It's the in-between space where resources are scarce, conditions are harsh. And in the Bible, the wilderness, it's not just a physical realm. We see it as a physical realm. It's representative of a greater spiritual reality that we all face. It's those times when life seems overwhelming. Our inner resources are depleted. And in some sense, I think all of us navigate through a continual wilderness. That's kind of the picture that the Bible paints, right? We experience a lack of things that we were meant to enjoy. We experience a lack of God's presence. We experience a lack of peace or fulfillment. And so in a sense, we are all in a wilderness, making our way either to life or making our way being thrust towards death by our own choices or lack of choices. But the Bible speaks, I think, of a more profound wilderness. It's a type of wilderness that we're all thrust into at some point. Usually it's unwillingly. It's either due to, again, to our poor choices or the fractured nature of our world. But in those types of wildernesses, they feel particularly unforgiving. Have you ever traversed a wilderness? I'm not asking for a show of hands, but I think the answer that most of us would give would be yeah. You know what it is to walk in and through a wilderness. I hate the wilderness. I am a control freak. I like things in their place. And the wilderness, it's a place of chaos. It's a place of disorder. It's a place where I don't have control. And so I struggle in both a literal and a metaphorical wilderness. And so as Mike aptly put it last week, you know, we weren't created for the wilderness. That was his big point, right? That we weren't created for the wilderness. So the question is, what purpose does the wilderness serve? I mean, what's the point? And here's what I would say. While we were not created for the wilderness, you and I need the wilderness. Without it, we can never find our way back to life because the wilderness is the preparation ground for the promised land. It's the preparation ground for life in God's presence. You and I, we need the wilderness. It's in the wilderness where we learn essential truths and we develop indispensable qualities that we otherwise wouldn't have. And we can see this. We can see with the passage that Ed read, this is demonstrated in Israel's wilderness experiences. You know, God delivered them out of Egypt, which was a place of death. There's kind of two chief locations that the Bible says don't go to, right? It's Babylon and Egypt. And by their own choices, Israel constantly gravitates to Babylon or Egypt. But we see that God, in the Israel's early days, God delivered them out of Egypt. You know, he delivered them out of a place of death. And his point was, he didn't just rescue Israel from something, he rescued Israel for something. And so he was preparing them for this promised land over here, the place of life where God's presence would reside with them. And so God took Israel out of Egypt, but then he utilized the wilderness to take Egypt out of Israel. The question was, how were they going to respond to that? And so we can see, we see it in one of Moses' final speeches. I'm actually going to read two parts to it. Ed read the first one, so I'm just going to go quickly back over it. It's Deuteronomy 29, 2 through 6. This is what Moses says. They've made it through the wilderness for the most part. They're about ready to enter the promised land. And this is what Moses says. He says, "Your eyes have seen all the Lord did." Now notice, he keeps going back to seeing. "You've seen all the Lord did in Egypt to Pharaoh, to all his officials, to all his land. With your eyes, your own eyes, you saw those great trials, those signs and great wonders. But to this day, the Lord has not given you a mind that understands or eyes that see or ears that hear." So essentially, there's a way that you can see and still not see. It's kind of the point here. "Yet the Lord says, during the 40 years that I have led you through the wilderness, your clothes did not wear out, nor did the sandals on your feet. You ate no bread and drank no wine or other fermented drink. And catch this last part. I did this so that you might know that I am the Lord your God." The whole point, the whole purpose of the wilderness, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. Every crisis, every lesson, every miracle, every moment in the wilderness was rooted in Israel knowing and understanding and seeing the truth of who they were and who God was. And so then we move on just a chapter later. It's really kind of the same line of thought. Moses, he describes the blessings of what life looks like over here. And then he goes and he describes, okay, but you know, I know you people. I know you're hard-headed. When you want to gravitate toward Babylon, when you want to gravitate toward those counterfeit Edens, these are the curses that are going to happen. You've got a choice. You've got a response. And this is what he says in Deuteronomy 30. "Now what I'm commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach." Basically, he's saying, like, this is not hard. "It's not up in the heavens that you have to ask who will ascend into the heaven to go get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it. So it's not so lofty that you have to go to the heavens to get it, nor is it beyond the sea so that you have to ask who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it." He says, no, the word is very near you. It's in your mouth. It's in your heart so you may obey it. This is not hard, guys, he says. "See, I set before you today life and prosperity and death and destruction. And for I command you today, love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him and to keep his commands and decrees and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess." The option is ours as well. It's set in front of us as well, life and death. And it's the question is the same, which are we going to choose? See, in the wilderness, it was God's desire to teach the Israelites lessons and develop qualities within them that would prepare them to live in God's presence in the promised land. It's the same for us. And when we view the wilderness from this perspective, Like it may or it may not make the wilderness any less difficult to endure, but I think it can at least reassure us that those of us who follow Jesus, the wilderness is never wasted. The wilderness can serve a function, an ultimate function, something that has real meaning and real value. So how do we learn to embrace the wilderness? That's the question. And herein lies the secret. So if you're a note taker, here it is. Here's the secret. The secret is that the path back to life is found in a journey of learned dependence. The path back to life is found in a journey of learned dependence. Does dependence come easy for you? It's not natural for me, all right? And again, I got a lot that I need depending for, and it still doesn't come natural. And I think, you know, one of the reasons is our culture, it glorifies independence. It scorns dependence as weakness. What do we hear? Hardship comes around, and typically we hear, hey, dig deep. You got this, all right? You've got this. You're strong enough to overcome this. You just got to dig far enough into yourself. Now, please don't mishear me. I am not necessarily bashing independence. I think independence it has its moments and it has its time and its place. We raise our kids in a way that we hope to instill with them independence. I don't necessarily want my kids with me when they're 40, okay? I want them to be able to live on their own, right? And so we instill independence in our kids, okay? That's not a bad thing. But here's the thing. The mentality of independence, it doesn't work when it comes to making it through the wilderness. The value of independence, it doesn't work when you're trying to find life. It just doesn't. And yet, how often does it creep in? I do want you to raise your hand on this one. How many of you have heard the expression, God helps those who help themselves? I think that comes from 2 Opinions 3:16. Not biblical, right? Yeah. I think we say that. Even some people may think, oh, that's biblical. And that is the furthest thing from the gospel. That runs completely counter to the message of Jesus, who said, you can't do anything without me. Like nothing. God, he doesn't need your strength. He doesn't desire your strength. He doesn't need your knowledge. He doesn't want your determination. He wants your dependence. He can use that. The other stuff just seems to get in the way. And this is why Jesus, he delivered the Sermon on the Mount. And when he did that, he spoke about like being a citizen of God's kingdom. And the very first and foundational thing he said was, you want to get into the kingdom of God, you got to be poor in spirit. Essentially, you have to be spiritually bankrupt. You can't bring anything to the table except just yourself and your need. It's why he constantly pointed to little children and said the kingdom of God belongs to ones like these, because little children understand dependency. The number one lesson our wildernesses are meant to teach us is dependence. The failures and hardships that come out of the wilderness have a way of revealing to us our need. And so I want to try to illustrate it this way. I think I've made it perfectly clear, right? I have a broken compass in my head, okay? I get easily turned around. That's what it means. So back in Texas, there's this amazing restaurant called Max Bar and Grill. Amazing. On special occasions, Sherry and I would love to go there. It was one of our favorite places. Now, getting to Max was a piece of cake, right? It's the Interstate 20 frontage road. You just turn right off and right into the restaurant. Easy. Now, getting out of Max and back to the house is a totally different ballgame. To leave Max, you got to take this back street, and it snakes around a shopping center, and it goes this way and that way, and kind of, and then eventually you hit a light called Little Road. Now, that might be deceiving. It's not a little road, okay? The name of the street's Little Road. It's actually quite a big road. And then it merges and joins another bigger road called Green Oaks. And the whole thing, they run parallel, and then they join, and they become the same thing, and the whole thing just seemed like a giant maze to my mind, right? I see that, it's like a mixed master, and I'm like, I don't know. And so every single time, I would come up to that light at Little Road, and I've just been snaking around the street, I've hit the light, and everything inside of me would say, okay, I need to go this way. And every single time, it would be the wrong way. Every single time. I mean, like clockwork. And so I'd get so frustrated. Sherry found it extremely entertaining. And so I'd say the next time, you know, I'm going to get this right. You know, 2 months would pass. We would go back to Max. I'm going to get it right the next time. And what happens, right? I'm pulling up to the light and panic starts to set in. In fact, I looked at the map beforehand. I started getting PTSD from just like those experiences of like, oh, panic. Like, do I go right? Do I go left? I got to get this right. And inevitably, again, what my mind would tell me was always, it seemed right and it was always wrong. Like, I don't understand it. I don't, like how I could be so sure of something and it could be so wrong. And again, Sherry would just laugh at me. It became a joke, you know? And then, I mean, this happened over and over and over and over. And then one day, things suddenly changed. You want to know what happened? Started with a simple realization. She drove. I should have. That would have been the smart thing to do, is make her drive. Yeah. It started with a simple realization and a question. It's like, this is ridiculous. I'm driving up to the light and I'm thinking, man, why am I stressing like that? This is ridiculous. Why am I doing this? How many wrong turns am I going to have to make before I accept the fact that I have a broken compass? It's not going to get any better. And that I'm sitting next to Sherry, who is a human GPS. I mean, literally, I think she knows better than the GPS does. Why am I trying to figure this out myself? And so as I came to the light, I said a couple sentences. I said, Sherry, which way do I turn? And it worked. It was amazing. She told me which lane to get in. I finally like came to terms and recognized my need and my dependence. And life went so much smoother after that. And so like bringing that back to navigating life and our journey, trying to get back to life. I know that many of you sitting in here might be thinking, you know, I do just fine in the wilderness. I'm a problem solver. It's what I do. And I know you've constructed an identity around being able to handle difficult situations and fix things on your own. I know we have people like you in here. I know people like that. And here's the truth. I have no doubt it's true. There's probably not much you can't handle or fight your way through. But I want to share a truth with you. And I want you to listen to this. If this is you, when it comes to navigating this journey towards real life, you cannot fight your way to it. You just can't. It only comes, the path back to life only comes through accepting and acknowledging that your spiritual compass is broken. You're just like the rest of us. You don't see well. None of us do. And so when it comes to steering towards life, you're basically like me sitting at that light. What seems good to you actually is the wrong way. And so we just go further and further away from life when we try to seek it on our own. And if you don't accept and acknowledge your broken compass, and if you don't learn dependence, you will never find real life. You may walk through some wildernesses, but they'll start to make you bitter, not better. Granted, you may learn to exist, but you will never begin to live. And so I want to end with this. I want to close kind of with this thought. It's this question, how do you and I learn dependence? Let's put some flesh on this, right? It's great to think of it up here theoretically, but what does it look like to learn dependence? And so I've kind of laid this out in three steps. The good news is we've already covered the first two. The first step is learning what life looks like. Like, you need to identify the destination. You need to know where you're going. And we've already said what life looks like. Life looks like moving toward the presence of God and becoming completely human. And so our decisions, if that's life, ought to be moving us towards that. The second step is acknowledging that you have a broken compass. And that may be hard for some of you. But you will, again, never move to life until you accept that fact that you need someone who knows the way to life. It won't happen. You have to accept the fact of your broken compass before you'll ever seek someone else out to help you. And then that leads us to step three, and that's where we're going to land and finish off on. I would say find the individual who knows the way and follow them. Like, I'm an expert at that. I can follow with the best of them. It's amazing when you realize you don't know where you're going, how great of a follower you become, right? I follow people driving somewhere and I am right on their back because I'm not going to lose them. And so that's step three. Find that individual that knows the way to life and follow them. And so let's talk about that one. I personally would suggest Jesus. This is what I found about Jesus. You can look at Israel. They went through the wilderness. They failed countless times. They were way more bitter than they were better. They either chose, often they chose to go back to Babylon or to Egypt. And then sometimes they were ultimately forced to go back to Babylon. Jesus, he walked the exact same path that Israel did. He just passed every test along the way. He himself was found in the desert for 40 days. He was led there by the Spirit. He relied completely on his Father. He passed every test. He ultimately found himself in a garden, right? And just like the first humans found themselves in a garden, yet Jesus chose the right tree. And on finding that tree, he chose to sacrifice himself on it. But this goes completely counter to how we as humans typically operate, right? A lot of times we're willing to sacrifice others to get what we want. Jesus himself, he chose to sacrifice himself to help others. So he chose the right tree. He chose to die on that tree for you and for me so that we could fully come back into the presence of God. We now have access to God's presence because of Jesus. 3 days later, he was resurrected. He blazed a path to life for those who would follow him so that when we experience resurrection like he did, we find the way to real life, new life, fulfilling life. The Apostle Paul described Jesus as the ultimate human. He also said he was the image of the invisible God. So essentially, if you want to know what God looks like, all you got to do is look at Jesus. And if you want to know the way back to the presence of God, you look at Jesus, and he calls us to follow him. When it comes to wilderness guides, I've never come across anybody who has better qualifications. Not even close. And so again, my recommendation, if you're going to choose a wilderness guide, Jesus is the one. Choose him. And so let that second part of the question, okay, let's say I've chosen Jesus. How do I follow him? What does depending on Jesus look like? And this is where we kind of get to those bonus secrets. I don't have all the answers. I can't give you just this clear-cut formula. I don't think that's the way it works. But again, I can give you some thoughts, some tips that I would call secrets. Here's the first tip I'd give you. I think the first step is practicing the presence of God. Practicing the presence of Jesus. Like Paul talks about like never ceasing to pray. I don't think he intended for us to think, oh man, that's a lot. I think of that, and I'm like, that's a lot of words. I don't have that many words in me to keep praying. I think what he's talking about there is it's an ongoing conversation. Sometimes when you pray, I'm not even talking, but Jesus is right there. Maybe I'm listening, but at least I'm practicing his presence. He is with me. I'm acknowledging him. He's a part of my life. I would say maybe this will put some of your minds at ease. I think you could maybe go to the extreme and like say, okay, Jesus, for every little decision, should I wear green or should I wear blue today? I don't think Jesus cares. I'm just be real honest. Like I think there are certain decisions that would just be absolutely exhausting. I don't think Jesus cares whether you wear blue or green, at least for the most part, or whether you have a peanut butter or a bologna sandwich, okay? There are things that don't matter that you're gonna be waiting all day waiting for a response. I think a lot of life, it's not about like, yeah, I'm not saying don't ask Jesus about certain things, but what I'm saying is what we ought to be praying for, what we ought to be seeking is not like answers per se, but a change of perspective. That is what we should be praying for. That is what we should be seeking from Jesus. We call that wisdom. So it's this idea that Jesus is all about vision correction and wanting you to see correctly. He's about improving your vision. I think of it this way. This whole thing, we got life over here. We have death over here. But the whole thing with sin, for somehow it's been flipped. And so, and this is part of our problem, I think. We end up going to death because we think it looks like life. It's like we have an upside down way of looking at things. And then we see Jesus and we're like, oh, that doesn't look very appealing. And so our perspective is completely distorted. And when you start to follow Jesus, and when you start to make him a part of your life, that perspective starts to flip back and life starts to look like life and we start to see things right side up. And so that's my first tip. Just practice the presence of Jesus. Allow him to change you. Knowing, you know, trusting him, just like me at that light, it may sound weird, it may seem strange, but I'm gonna trust Jesus. I'm gonna trust the things that he says. Knowing that I have to depend on him to generate something inside of me that I can't generate myself. A good starting point for this, if you're kind of wondering, I'd go to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. I think it's Matthew 5:5-7, that whole section, Jesus is on a mountain talking about the kingdom of God and what it looks like. And if you want, first of all, to get a right side up perspective on life, that's where you go. The other thing is if you want like ammunition that will feed your need and let you know how badly you need to depend on Jesus, go read the Sermon on the Mount. I challenge, and I read it and when I saw it like the first time, I was like, I can't do that. I can't live that way. The things that he calls you and I to do are the way that the kingdom operates is completely countercultural. And so if you want, I mean, that's where I would start. I would go to the Sermon on the Mount, expect a jolt to your system, all right? But that's where your perspective will start to be changed right side up. And then what I would do is I would take the principles in the Sermon on the Mount and I would go compare them to what we know about Jesus's life, what he taught, how he lived, and start trying to imitate those things, right? The way he treated people, the way he loved people, the unconditional love he gave, the moments where he actually got angry and spoke up when things weren't right. Start trying to imitate him. That's a great starting point for really knowing Jesus. Here's the second secret I'd give you, or the second tip. Expect failure and mistakes. You are going to fail. You are going to make mistakes. Expect them. It's okay. Kind of going back to like the physical compass that's broken in my head. I've accepted it now for, I mean, at least 15 years. You know, I actually have just accepted it. I'm good with it. I have no problem depending on the GPS or whoever knows more. But every once in a while, it reverts back. This pride that I have. So last week, I'm taking Trinity and one of her friends home. Her friend lives It's dark. I use that as my excuse. Her friend lives like 3 blocks away from us. I mean, I've driven this route countless times. I just go driving. This is the way I go. But for some reason, it's dark, and I drop her friend off, and I turn around, and I get to the intersection. I get to the intersection to go back to the house, and it's like, I've never seen this before. It's like I've never seen it before in my life. I was like, do I go right? Do I go left? And I'm kind of that panic starts to well up again. And of course, Trinity's a little mini Sherry. So she know. I mean, she like her GPS is like spot on. And I had the chance to ask. And instead, I just went for it. I have a 50-50 shot. I went the wrong way. Trinity's like, why are we going this way? I was like, I just want to take the scenic route. You know, it's like, we're just going to go around. Totally, I had to go back and like confess that and tell her, no, I had no idea where I was going. It still creeps back in. Even after all the practice of depending, you know, you're going to make mistakes. It's okay. And here's why it's okay. Because failure breeds growth. That's the last secret. Failure breeds growth. The wilderness is like a refiner's fire. It exposes those impurities in us so that we allow God to remove them. And so this is what it's looked like for me. Again, I have a hard time, like, I can only tell you like what I've experienced. One way that this has looked for me, where like I've had these tests and I failed them and then come back and I can actually see, oh, maybe I've grown from this. And I've alluded to this before, but you know, back in 2014, it was a great year for me, the first half. Had a great year at school as a teacher, like from a coaching standpoint, had the most success I'd ever had. Was voted like teacher of the year in the yearbook, you know, like I was like, things were great. I decided, you know, it was the year Micah was born. I was going to go ahead and step away from coaching to spend more time at home. I was excited about that. And then come late December, I'd had a spot that I was checked out just accidentally, honestly. I went to go get one thing removed that I didn't like, and they found a spot that was melanoma, and learned about that. And I did not respond to that well. The thought of like just the word cancer and me, something triggered, and all of a sudden, I went into like severe anxiety panic attack that like spiraled into a nervous breakdown. It wasn't pretty. Like I was 2 weeks, I was about useless. It almost cost me like my job. You know, luckily I work in an amazing place that was full of grace. But it was not, it was about 6 months of depression, anxiety, that I kind of crawled my way out of. It wasn't fast. It took me probably another year or so, or another 6 months, so a full year total, to even get back to kind of like the person I was. It wasn't a good time. Wasn't a good time in our marriage. It wasn't a good time in my life. It was, as far as wildernesses go, it was bad. It was dark. And so fast forward, coming out of that, and really it was, I consider it one of my biggest failures ever. It's humiliating, like, being that in front of the people you love the most, your kids seeing you like that. And so I think I got here in 2017, maybe 2018. One of the things I do now is it's 6 month checkups just to make sure that I don't have anything creeping up or popping up. And one of those checkups, I thought I was great, and the dermatologist kind of poked between my toes and found what looked like another spot. And man, my heart sank. images of that wilderness came back. But what I can say is, in the midst of those 2 weeks, which like waiting 2 weeks to find a result like that, if any of you, I'm sure you've experienced, some of you have, it's grueling. What I can tell you is, in those 2 weeks, there was peace. Like I got closer to God in those 2 weeks because of that. That it didn't really scare. I didn't feel great about it, but I had grown. I could see the fact that, like, I saw how I responded the first time, and I saw how I was brought down low, and I saw my need and my dependence, and how God took me out of that. And so when the second time came around and the test happened, I can say, yeah, I felt like I passed that. I felt God, I could see growth. God has done something in me that I can see, yeah, this is real. It's happened. I didn't notice it. I'm not sure when it happened, but it happened. And so for me, that's where the wilderness, it plays a part in bringing us back to life. It again, it's like a refiner's fire. It allows for opportunities for dependence, and it allows us to take steps closer to completion and to life. You know, As I conclude, I think so often the gospel is presented as getting saved to escape to heaven. I think that's a lot of times how we unfortunately frame it. I don't think that's the gospel at all. Because again, if the gospel is about completion, then what we're talking about here, and it's about making our way back to life, you know, it's about like us becoming what God intended us for us to become. How you see the gospel, whether you see it as a way to escape or as a means to completion, it has everything to do with how you respond to your wildernesses. And if with that mindset, when we come in with the right mindset and the purpose of the gospel, becoming completely who we were made to be, then all of a sudden, I think it can change the way that we respond to it. We can learn to embrace it. We don't have to like it. I don't know anybody that really likes the wilderness, but we can at least learn to embrace it, knowing that the wilderness is never wasted. It is making you, has the chance and opportunity to make you who you were created to be. Life is found in being completely like Jesus, and ultimately finding ourselves closer to the presence of God until we experience him completely. And so I just want to close with James 1:4. I think it summarizes that whole idea beautifully. This is what James 1:4 says. It's talking about this idea of perseverance. It's talking about persevering, and I think he probably has a wilderness in mind. Persevering through this wilderness, he said, let perseverance have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So that's my prayer for each and every one of you. Because I know you're going through a wilderness. And if you're not in one right now, you're gonna be. And so my prayer for you is that you would see it for what it is and allow it to change you and allow it to take you back to life. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for the fact that, God, when we follow you, when we accept you, you don't leave us. So we're not in the wilderness alone. You're there with us every step of the way. My heart hurts for those that might have to walk through wildernesses on their own. And so, Lord, right now my prayer is that these words would really stick. I pray that, Lord, you would be moving in hearts and that you would challenge us to see our wildernesses differently, and more than anything, that it would teach us dependence on you. Teach us to trust you. Teach us to follow you. Teach us to not take our eyes off of you. So I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks again for joining us today. If you've accepted Christ, or have questions about having a relationship with Jesus, we would love to hear from you. Call us at 360-293-3729 or visit our website anytime. Have a great week, and remember, you are loved by us and by Jesus.